don't want to be into something fixed for 5 to 10 years at a rate that you believe is higher than it will be in 18 to 24 months. So you'll buy a floating rate product that you can then refi in 18 to 24 months at a lower rate.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. What is going on, everybody? You know the drill. Every Monday, we come at you all things multifamily real estate, solo topics, bring on seasoned and experienced guests to help you better navigate the multifamily real estate market to make you and I a better investor. And on Fridays, we come at you with all things personal finance. We all know it's not what you make, but what you keep, and you got to get your money right. So on Fridays, I come at you a lot of solo shows. I share my experience in finance and also just doing a little research, as well as occasionally bringing on guests to give you strategies to get your money working not only harder, but smarter. And before I get into today's episode, I just want to do a little housekeeping. You know, as always, if you get value from any of these shows, please share it with someone else who you think you get value. That's the point of the show, is to help others. And the way I can get out in front and help more is by you sharing, because then it improves the algorithm. In another way, also by leaving a rating and review, whether that's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. But I just wanted to give a shout out to someone who left a rating and review, and that's from HTAM2000, great and relevant multifamily related content. Sean is an experienced investor and offers practical advice and strategies for building a successful multifamily portfolio through the conversation with his guest, through his own experiences and perspectives. The conversations are informative, engaging, and provide valuable insights into the multifamily market. The podcast also covers a wide range of topics from acquiring properties and financing to property management and cash flow analysis. Whether you are a seasoned investor or just getting started in the multifamily space, there's something for everyone to learn from this podcast. It is a great resource for anyone looking to expand their knowledge and grow their business. Thank you, HTAM2000. I really appreciate that. Again, if you haven't done so, please leave a rating and review. All right. Today's topic, I wanted to talk about CBRE. CBRE releases, they send out a survey at the end of every year, questions related to the upcoming year. So they sent this at the end of 2022 or 2023. So this is the CBRE investor and lender outlook. They survey both investors, so like ourselves, and lenders, so those that we get debt from. And I just want to give a little preface. 50% of respondents managed over $5 billion worth of assets. So you're getting some responses from some really quality investors that operates some big companies. And so I'm just going to go through some of the things that I thought were interesting, some of the highlights from the survey. So this episode is more just, I just wanted to come on, look at this every year. There's also PwC puts out one. That's another great one. I haven't read that one yet, but it's on this week. And I'll give some highlights of what I've already seen on that one, but that's one you'd want to check out as well. And this is the stuff you can go just Google and it's free online. All right. So purchase and sale activity is expected to slow significantly based on respondents. Almost 60% of respondents plan to buy less in 2023 compared to 2022. It's quite a bit, with almost 50% planning on decreasing transaction volume by more than 10% in 2023. So that's transaction volumes, including both sale and disposition activity. So acquiring and selling. And only 15% of respondents had plans to buy more than they bought the previous year. That's quite small. I bet if that same survey done last year, it would have been significantly higher. 44% plan of fewer dispositions than last year, and over 15% with no intentions to sell any assets at all. So that's an interesting one, right? Because sure like me, you all out there want to buy. Well, if there's going to be less sale or disposition volume, what are we going to buy, right? In my point, the stuff that is being sold, it's going to be competitive. Even if they come out and look like a discount, might be bid up because there's less fish in the water, right? So many firms are betting the worst is yet to come, and distress has yet to hit the market in any meaningful capacity. So operators have little incentive to sell in this environment, albeit maybe they're forced to sell due to a financing aspect, whether that be floating rate debt, coming loan maturity, where it's not favorable to refinance. So this is things to consider. These are big operators. They feel that the major distress has yet to come. there's been no distress in the market of meaningful capacity. So that could present opportunities. That distress comes and people are pinched and feel the pain and have to. So it's something to obviously look out for. In the report, they discussed asset classes that are in favor. So they liked real estate debt. So being on the debt side of things, because obviously yields are climbing, interest rates are climbing. So makes sense, right? Build to rent. We obviously know Blackstone, BlackRock have huge funds they put together for build to rent specifically. And those that aren't familiar with the term build to rent, they're building neighborhoods to sell the houses, but to rent them. And these are generally single family, you know, that you could have some duplexes in there and townhomes, but generally single family built to rent. Life science, think as like research lab, maybe for a pharma company or other type of life science. So you're talking about the office space and the lab space that they utilize, self-storage and affordable housing. And so headwinds, they say multifamily, decreasing rent, which we've seen. But if you look at PwC feels multifamily will have bumpy but solid year. E-commerce taken hit. Obviously, that comes to consumer sentiment. So if we are going to see a lot more distress in the environment or in the economy and the deeper recession, people pull back. So e-commerce could get hit. And same with retail. Consumer sentiment is down. Usually they buy less. And then same thing with hospitality. Travel is usually the first thing to get cut in a downturn. And then office is a new work culture, more work from home. PwC's report, they actually said 10 to 20% of the office real estate stock may need to be removed or repurposed. That's a lot. Just like anything in real estate, it's really market specific. So in some areas, there's more work from home. Some areas, there's less, right? Really depends. All right. So here's a couple more highlights. 40% of investors believe there will be 10% plus discount for all product types. 25% of investors believe there will be 30 plus discount for stabilized class A office buildings and shopping malls. So there we go again for class A office buildings. They're going to be taking a hit. 50% of investors believe there will be a 30% plus discount for value add class A office buildings, which makes even more sense because the sector is still going to take a hit. There's even more risk if you got to put money into the space from a value add perspective. And then let's talk about underwriting from lenders. So general consensus is more conservative underwriting standards from lenders. 86% of lenders surveyed said they plan to make more conservative underwriting assumptions this year. 24% said they plan on adjusting cap rate assumptions. 20% will adjust exit strategy assumptions, and 17% will adjust debt yield requirements. Most likely will be increasing those debt yield requirements. So that is something to look out for. So maybe in the past, you've had to meet a debt yield of 7 to 8%. Maybe it's going to be higher. Maybe it's going to be more like 8 to 10, 9 to 10, somewhere around there. So you're going to want to make sure that the deal meets that along with the DCR. 48% of lenders surveyed said they expect loan origination to be more than 10% lower than last year. Not surprised on that. They believe inflation and the 10-year treasury will peak in the first half of 2023. So that will most likely coincide with the easing of, I should say easing, but so yeah, essentially the easing of raising rates, right? So they're not going to raise fast or maybe at all. Maybe it'll stop mid-2023. That's not to say they're going to pull back, but they say first half of 2023, we should see the 10-year inflation peak, which if that's the case, then the 10-year's got to climb more because it's already retracted over the last couple of months. 57% said they plan to issue more floating rate debt than fixed, which to me was very interesting, right? Because everyone in this environment wants fixed debt, right? Because of the uncertainty, the rising rates. But I guess if you look back to that previous statement regarding the 10-year and inflation peaking first half of 2023, those two coincide, right? Because if you do feel that's going to happen, that means within the next 18 to 24 months, you probably also believe that rates will retreat or definitely not climb. So you feel you don't want to be into something fixed for 5 to 10 years at a rate that you believe is higher than it will be in 18 to 24 months. So you'll buy a floating rate product that you can then refi in 18 to 24 months at a lower rate. Personally, I think that's still risky. We don't know what's yet to come. I still advise fixed debt. Yeah, it can be a 5-year ARM, but I still advise fixed-year debt. But that was surprising to me, that 57% said they plan on issuing more floating rate debt than fixed. And I still see it. One of my brokers still recommends that you fix floating rate, or I mean, excuse me, fixed bridge, but it's at a higher rate. And so I just personally wouldn't do floating rate at this time until more of the dust settles. I think there's still more pain to come. Also, 57% said they preferred loan terms that are 5 years or less. So again, lenders prefer 5 years or less. So again, that goes with the last two statements. More floating rate debt, because generally that's 2 to 3 years for bridge. And then obviously they think the 10-year inflation will peak from first half of 2023. So those three are in line. So that's interesting. Really interesting. They really feel that rates will come down 18, 24 months. So that is something to note. And again, guys, you can get this stuff online. See, just go to CBRE Investor and Lender Outlook Surveys. There's more information. I thought this was just some high level stuff that was really interesting. They also ranked, or not, based on the respondents' answers, they ranked the 10 most preferred markets. And again, Sunbelt, again, a few outliers. So number one, Dallas-Fort Worth, 2, Austin, 3, Miami, South Florida, 4, Los Angeles, 5, Nashville, 6, Atlanta, 7, Charlotte, 8, Phoenix, 9, Boston, and 10, Raleigh-Durham. And PwC, really similar ranking as well. Based on respondents' answers, those are top markets going into 2023. And if you look at prospects for major commercial property types, and this is in the PwC Emerging Trends in Real Estate 2023, they rank each asset class from 1, which is abysmal, to 5, which is excellent. Number 1 for 2023 is industrial / distribution at 3.69. Number 2, multifamily housing at 3.67. Then we have hotels at 3.33, single family housing at 3.32, retail at 2.86, and office at 2.72. So the top 2, industrial / distribution and multifamily housing. From a development, that's from an investment prospect, just buying stable, not necessarily stabilized, but you know, built assets. From a development prospect, similar ranking. The top 3 are in distribution at 3.67, multifamily housing at 3.52, single family housing at 3.34. So very similar. And I'll give you a quick, since this is a multifamily show, I'll give you a quick highlight of what they're saying about multifamily. Again, they call it a bumpy ride and a bumper crop. So demographics, they say a 4-generation surge of household formation and housing preference will buoy fundamental apartment demand through and beyond 2030. Technology impact. Exponential advances in technology, data, and artificial intelligence capability and applications have impacts on building cycle, property operations and management, and resident experience, cost versus value models. Capital liquidity. A post-pandemic era flight to safety will continue to divert yield-seeking capital into residential rental real estate vehicles. And you've all heard me harp on this before. I really think multifamily will trade in a more narrow cap rate band, whereas in decades past, in kind of a tougher environment of recession, you might have seen, say, average caps go from 6-7 to 10-12, right? I don't see that happening because more capital is seeking yield, right? Risk, more of a risk adjusted return, more yield. And they're not finding that in the bond market right now, where traditionally they have. So I still see it flooding into multifamily real estate, which will obviously drive up competition, drive up demand, which I then believe will result in a more narrow cap rate band. Now, again, this is not to say you shouldn't underwrite your exit strategy at a lower cap rate than your entry. I still think you should increase that cap rate over time, but not to a point that you may have in the past, not too aggressive. Policy constraint. Policymakers' ever more restrictive land use barriers will spread sharper supply versus demand mismatches to more cities, staining market-based solutions and sculpting evolving geographies as people seek refuge from high-cost locales. In its broadest sense, a housing shortage in the United States describes a lack of sufficient access to income-matched apartment rental housing today, with more than 1 out of 3 of America's 44 million renter households earning less than $36,000 a year. Roughly every other rental household puts more than 30% of their earning toward rent. And 1 out of every 4 households spends 50% or more of their wages on housing. Those percentages reflect divides that deepen because not enough new apartment units are coming online. And obviously, again, this is market specific. So in some markets, yeah, there's more apartments coming online than others. That's just striking to me because they say you shouldn't spend more than 30%. That's kind of the threshold of your income on housing. But we're seeing more and more people break that threshold. And what concerns me about that is from just a straight affordability aspect, but also just from a psychological one too. People are just not going to want to spend more than that 30%. I think it's going to cause rental growth to really slow down, maybe even in certain circumstances, decrease at a decent rate because it's just not affordable. And I think people, there's just a psychological aspect to it of not paying that. And then, but it obviously goes to the market. Like if they don't have another place to live, then they may be forced to. So this is just really, really interesting data. And I'm excited to jump into this more and really go through the PwC's report. But I just wanted to kind of share investor and lender sentiments from that CBRE survey because it's really interesting. Now, who knows, fast forward in a year, we'll see if this kind of aligned to their responses. But again, thank you all for tuning in. And if you got value, please share this with someone who you think could get value as well. As always, easy doesn't pay well, and instant gratification is self-destructive. So not only get out there and work hard for your money, but have your money work hard for you so we can all create the lives of our dreams. Make this world a better place. All right, catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and of course share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.